You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk and show number 329. Today is Sunday, April 17th, and my name is Hamilton. No Steve again tonight, but I am joined by Curtis, thankfully. So, Curtis, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Excellent. Before we get into it, let's remind you that you can find us always at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. You can also now find us at www.blogtalkradio.com, as well as a ton of other great podcasts there. You can follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk. Check out our Facebook page. And as always, tell your friends about Atlanta Baseball Talk as we approach our 10-year anniversary. So, Curtis, on tonight's show, we will keep our eye on Freddie G. We'll check our worry meter on Freddie F. And we'll look for young rays of hope on the farm. But first, the Braves win. The Braves win. The Braves win. After literally the entire planet had dubbed the Braves the worst team in the leagues, they bounced back with three wins over the Marlins. And, you know, you couple that with a lot of close losses compared to blowout losses, and maybe the Braves have more been a victim of bad schedule and bad luck. So, Curtis, who is this team? Did we turn a corner this quickly? Are we on the rebound?
If we're going to talk about how the schedule does not play out very well for the Braves and how it is not so far, getting a little break against the Marlins, it turns in the opposite direction, very directly back in the other way. We got Dodgers, Mets, Red Sox, Cubs, Mets, D-backs. That's the next series of teams that we have to play. Get a little break with Phillies. Then it's Royals, Pirates. I mean, it's a brutal first month that the Braves are going to have to endure here. So, there's definitely that they could have won a couple of more games. They certainly could have taken those first two against the Nationals. Maybe the Marlins are worse than we think they are.
Are they worse than the Braves, you think?
No, they're not worse than the Braves.
Yeah. I think they are. I think the Marlins aren't quite there yet. They're missing some pieces. You know, they have some, you know, you see Jose Fernandez and you see Giancarlo Stanton and some of the other pieces. You feel like you want them to be better, but they still have holes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they're still young.
Yeah. Except where they're really old. Like Ichiro.
Yes. Well, yeah.
But it was great. I mean, regardless of who they played and what the scenario was, it was so nice to have the Braves winning. It was nice to see them scoring.
Yeah. All that.
So, yeah, I mean, the four game series against the Nationals, they scored 7 runs. They scored 18 runs in the 3 games against the Marlins. So, obviously, the pitching was not as tough in this series as it was against the Nationals. It's great. A clutch hit today. They blew a big lead, as they had kind of done before in a couple of games. But it was nice that they didn't lose the game.
They scored
actually
late.
Won the game.
I know.
Guys who have not been producing much at all. Jace Peterson, Malik Smith getting some big hits today. Markakis continuing his tear. So, yeah, it's great. But, again, you fall right back into a 3-game series against the Dodgers. So,
yeah, it was certainly good to get a win. I mean, when a Thursday afternoon after the loss to the Nats, I didn't think we could beat anybody. I didn't think we were even a major league team. I thought we were just horrible. So, and after as much as we dumped on the team last week, it was so good to get a win. It was just so great. I still feel like we're not quite there. I mean, obviously the Marlins make you look a lot better. I think the whole Oliveira situation's bad. Inciarte injury's bad. I mean, I think we still have a lot of question marks, but it was good to know that we're not as bad as that team that started 0-9. We're just not that bad. We just had some bad breaks. It was a tough start to the season, and when you don't have a win yet, every loss is amplified. And, you know, tough competition, bad schedule. I'm looking forward to this week, though. I'm ready to feel like the slump is behind us. We've won some games. We got that monkey off our back, and I think we're going to be a little bit better going forward.
Are you going to go to any of the Red Sox games?
I am. I'm going to the Grateful Dead night on Thursday. Thursday the 28th is the Grateful Dead night, so there's the Braves game and then a tribute show afterwards.
Nice.
Yeah, totally my scene.
Yeah, nothing says Braves Red Sox like the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. So, yeah, that should be fun. All right, Curtis, so we're going to take a quick break, but then we're going to introduce a new section here. All right, so, Curtis, let's start something that may be short-lived, but maybe not, and let's introduce the Freddy Watch. Because there was a...
We need to come up with a better name.
Yeah, but. All right. We'll take recommendations from anybody out there, any of our listeners, the Freddy Watch. I think it's safe to say that Freddy has had his detractors in the past, maybe on this show and off, outside of this show. There's been a lot of articles and people talking about should Freddy go, and for good reason, right? Both in the past, you know, he's conservative to a fault, stubborn to a fault. He makes some head scratching decisions. We've all had our beefs with Freddy, but Curtis, the 0-9 start. The team, the what we've done so far this season, how much do you put that on Freddie?
This is one of these perpetual comments that people make when you want to point fingers at somebody that he doesn't pitch and hit and do all those things, play defense. And so with that, a lot of it goes to the team. I mean, there's been some bad pitching. The offense has been terrible. The errors have been critical and costly, and he really, I don't know how much input he had on putting together the team that currently exists as part of the Atlanta Braves. But, I mean, there's certainly some situations where he has made some pitching decisions, where he's made some pinch hitting decisions, which were not the best decisions in hindsight. And frankly, at the time they seemed sort of dubious. So he bears responsibility for those actions. But I don't know how much, I don't know that the Braves were going to be all that much better than sort of where they stand right now.
Yeah.
Either way.
I don't think so either. I mean, I think it's, you know, the outcomes are much more a result of the talent on the field than what's going on in the dugout. You know, and at least he's not asleep at the wheel, right? He may be swerving to the left, but he's not asleep at the wheel. He's trying stuff. He's engaged. I do think he provides a good atmosphere for the, you know, for the young people. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about some off-the-field drama, but you don't hear a lot about off-the-field drama, so you got to give him that. So, I mean, I think we could have a better manager, but I agree with you. I don't think a lot of this should fall on Freddie's shoulders at this point. But having said that, you know, do you think shaking it up would help the team? Do you think that the Braves should answer the calls for Freddie's head and move in a new direction?
Well, the only way that I would want them to do that, and I will go on record, I do want them to move on from Freddie. You know, people that might just be listening to this show.
Noted.
People that have listened to the show for a long time. Hate get to hear me say that again. Yes. They definitely need to get beyond Freddie being their manager.
Yeah.
But I think if they're going to make a move right now, it has to be an in-house thing. Like they promote Terry Pendleton or they promote somebody like that from who they've got there, as opposed to bringing in another manager. I would rather, and then once the season ends, then you go and find your new manager. I guess I'm just worried that obviously it's going to be a big transition. You're going into a new park and kind of a roster turnover in some regards, perhaps, hopefully. And so I would rather that be fresh with a new manager at that time. And that's my thinking. But I don't know, like, is this... I think that there's obviously still history assigned to the Braves, but is it really a go-to job right now?
No.
You know?
I mean,
are you going to get the best manager that's available?
You're
is he
going to
come and coach the Braves?
You're not. I mean, they're not a dumpster fire, but they're smoldering, right? I mean, they're bad, right? So that you're not going to get Tony La Russa to come out of retirement or, you know, whoever. This is not one of those jobs. So they're going to – And this is not the year or the moment to do that either. Everybody knew this was going to be a rebuilding year. This was going to be tough. These guys are going to go through a lot of losing. And then to do that on top of, you know, a clubhouse in turmoil and a transition and no footing. I mean, I think at least the players know where they stand. Freddie hopefully provides some stability or comfort there. And I think you're right. Why do it this year? I think there's absolutely nothing to be gained. I don't think anybody would want the job where it is now. At least wait till the off season. That's the earliest. So having said that, what do you think the Braves will do, Curtis? Do you think they'll act differently what you're saying?
I think he's safe. I know that they came out when you guys did those interviews, and Hart and Coppola, they all really felt like this team was going to be much better this year. And I know that some of that is PR spin, but I think that they legitimately believed that this team could be better this year, that given all the things that happened last year with the injuries and the offense and all those things, that they could be better this year. And so I think there is going to be some pressure on him to have them be better. But I think that Bobby Cox having a role in the leadership of the organization certainly helps shield Freddie in some regard.
Yeah.
And I think that they keep him. I just don't see, and I also think that having a remote, disinterested ownership situation who now kind of looks at the Braves as a real estate entity more so than a baseball team, that helps him too, because you don't have a meddlesome, overbearing owner that is directly engaged in those types of decisions.
Yeah. I think they'd have to be epically bad. I think they would have to go on a 40-game losing streak where there was nothing to be done but to fire Freddie. I think he's pretty safe as well. And I think there will be demanding of it throughout the season. People will be calling for his head, but I don't see the upside of firing him. And I think the Braves are way too conservative to do that. We will see. So Curtis, let's move on to fair or foul, where I will put something out there and we either agree with it fair or disagree with it foul. And we have to check in on the Oliveira situation. I know a lot of it has been covered already this week and you know, doing a show on Sunday, you sort of miss the immediate buzz. But for those of you who may not know, Oliveira charged for assault and battery early Wednesday morning at the Ritz-Carlton in Pentagon City outside of D.C., and the evidence is pretty damning here, Curtis. It feels pretty obvious that something bad happened and that Oliveira was to blame. And I can imagine a couple of scenarios playing out. So he actually is incarcerated, goes to jail. He pleads. Somehow the charges get dropped, like Greg Hardy's did. Whatever. This could play out a couple of ways, but the big question is, what should the Braves do about it? So, Curtis, regardless of how it plays out, fair or foul, the Braves should immediately release Oliveira.
I guess there's due process in this country, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't really know. Maybe it's because it hasn't really happened to anybody on the Braves that you've had some sort of domestic dispute type of situation impact one of the players. So I don't really, I mean, I'm sure that MLB, given all the things that happened with Greg Hardy and in the NFL that were so prominent, that I would imagine that all the major league leagues have taken a very sharp turn in how they're going to deal with domestic violence.
Yeah. Well, weren't there two cases in the in baseball this year? I'm forgetting the players now, so I won't go there. But
what was the punishment? Do you know? I mean, is it a long suspension? He's just on administrative leave right now, what they're calling it.
Yeah, I think they're waiting for it to play out. So I don't know, and I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know. I mean, it's disgusting. It's disgusting in every conceivable way. I'm a husband. I'm a brother. You know, I'm a son. Any sort of violence towards women is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And so you don't want that in any aspect of something that your kids are going to be part of, to think about that, to think about this guy as part of a team that you're going to be rooting for. It's tough. And you know, in the most minimal way, he's done nothing for the team, you know?
Yeah.
He has not been good. And so to add this to that, I'm sure they're not going to release him. I cannot imagine that they release him. I'm sure he will get a lengthy suspension, whatever comes through. And a lot of these, unfortunately, they end up, these women that get involved in these situations, like the woman that was involved with Greg Hardy, they settle. They get paid off for their silence, and they take the money.
Yeah.
And these guys don't get charged with anything, and it sort of gets swept under the rug. Kobe Bryant. But it's, I don't know. I mean, yeah. Should he be immediately released? In a perfect world, yes.
Yeah.
He should lose his job.
And I feel like there's more of a precedent for something that sort of extreme than there has been in the past. You know, I agree with you. I think that everyone is deserves due process. Still, the evidence seems here. I mean, maybe I'm overreacting. I think you have to release him. I think that even if he settles, like if he was Greg Hardy, I wouldn't want Greg Hardy on this team.
Oh no!
You know, and I think and obviously I'm going to go out on a limb.
Yeah,
I may be in a small minority here, but you know we're sort of at this genesis of a new Braves going into a new stadium, and you know I think ownership has shown confidence that the fans will come back. I think to some degree there's tension between the fans and ownership right now and the team right now. And it's tenuous, this relationship, and they really need for the fans to be excited and inspired and connected to this team as they transition to some more bad seasons and some more traffic getting to the stadium and a lot of things to iron out. I don't think they can afford to have this. And I think he's guilty. I think he's guilty because the way that, even at this point, I think the way that the evidence has been portrayed against him, and if it's unfair, it's unfair. But I don't think the Braves can take any chances at this point. We don't need him that bad. He just has no ties to the community. Whatever happened with the trade, whatever. So what? I think you have to move on.
Well, I'm sure that they've already been studying what sort of financial hit it will be if there's something in his contract that voids his entire contract for something involving a situation like this. So I'm sure that they've already been going through those steps to see. And frankly, sadly, it would be a much tougher decision for them to make, I think, if he was really, really, really good. Just that he's not been that good. And so I think the decision, whatever it might be, would be easier for them to, and especially if they can get out from any sort of financial obligation too, I think they would let him go. I will be willing to bet that he survives.
Yeah.
That he gets a suspension and he remains a Brave.
I do too. But I wish they wouldn't. I don't think they should. All right. So another one. So Freddie Freeman was given the day off on Thursday and he was bummed. But to that point, he had been 2-for-25 and batting 80. So in an article, he ended up saying that he was simply was having a hard time catching up with fastballs. And he talked about a couple of at-bats against Gio Gonzalez and how Gio was getting the better of him. So Curtis, so far this season, Freddie's slash line is 125, 317, 250. Doesn't include today's game where he had two hits. He's got one homer. So fair or foul, you are worried about Freeman.
Fair. I'll just drop it right there. And you look at his numbers since that great season he had in 2013, they've gone down every single year. The injuries have started to pop up. I there's no doubt about it. I mean, with the production matched with the fact that starting next year he's going to get paid $20 million a season. You know, you hope he is not the Atlanta Braves version of Ryan Howard, that they signed a big contract and their skills or the injuries racked up and it just eroded their skills that they were a shell of the player they were before, and then you're just stuck with them. I am worried. I'm obviously hoping that that's not going to be the case, and we will see in the next few weeks how he can shake all this off. But those are not the words that you want to hear, that he's struggling catching up to fastballs. And I would say that Gio does not have the best fastball going either.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I will officially put myself on the worried list.
Yeah. I mean, he says he's 100% healthy. He says the whole fastball thing is just a mechanical fix, maybe. I think I will always worry about Freddie. I think I will always. I remember when Chipper, in sort of his final seasons, when we really needed him, you know, and he was the thing that would keep us potentially in the postseason hunt, I would cringe every time he would swing hard. I would, you know, sort of wince every time he'd come barreling in on a slow roller to third and do the bare hand grab, throw to first, pull his hamstring, you know, that whole move.
Tear up his knee.
Yeah, I mean, just so every time he jumped. And I feel it with Freddie. He swings so hard. I would just worry. I wince every time Freddie swings. He feels fragile to me. And that's not to say that maybe he is healthy. He could be right when he says he's 100% healthy. He doesn't seem 100% himself. So maybe he's just not back to where he was. Maybe his timing will catch up. But I will always worry about Freddie. Fair, too. All right, and finally, Curtis, let's talk about Inciarte. So he is on the DL with a recurring hamstring injury. It's one that he had last season. We talked about this briefly last week. So for him, Curtis, fair or foul, Inciarte's hamstring injury concerns you over the longer term?
Well, the guy, you know, I mean, obviously he's a person that relies on speed and things like that. He's a top of the lineup type of guy. So hamstrings are not really great for guys that rely on speed, and also for outfielders. And I know that this is not something new. This is something he dealt with last year as well. So, I don't want to seem like a worrywart here, but maybe the fact that we've touched on things that are worrisome to me, and so they're all being brought up here, so I'm saying yes to everything. But yeah, it's sort of concerning to me too.
Yeah, I'm going to say foul, maybe more out of hoping than really believing, and maybe just to mix it up a little bit. I do recognize that it was a concern last season, and that for someone that plays the game like he does, a hamstring injury is troublesome. I think it's too early to tell, and I think he can come back from this. I think this may be something that he shakes, gets the right treatment, and is still productive for 140 games a season. I think it's going to hamper him a little bit, but I don't have major concerns over this long term yet. Give it time.
Good.
Check in with 2 weeks. Or 2 months.
Right.
All right, so let's take a quick break, and then let's go down to the farm to look for some bright spots down there. All right, Curtis, so we are going to introduce another new section, the Farm Watch, where I'm going to check in on some of our offensive prospects as well as some of our pitching prospects and just see what you're thinking. So obviously the two, Malix came up and didn't have a great week, but the other two, Ozzie and Dansby, are having a great week. So in Mississippi, the slash line for Ozzie is 310, 370, 333. He's doing great. And for in Carolina, for Dansby, he's even better. 350, 422, 500 with a 922 OPS. He's ripping it up. So Curtis, does that make you happy?
that's great stuff. Those are good numbers. Those are things I like to hear. And hopefully Malik's, I don't know how long he's going to be up here. I'm assuming that I guess Daniel Castro got called up for, is that right? Daniel Castro was the Oliveira call up.
Yeah. And then
so Malik's got called up. What was the move that Malik's got called up?
For Inciarte.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, of course, I mean that, you know, that's our future right there, and that is as exciting a start as you could hope from both of those guys. We'll see how they get advanced this year. See if they move up. See if Ozzie ends up in AAA and Dansby makes it to AA, or maybe even up to AAA, or maybe at some point they're both playing for the Braves.
Who knows? Certainly, but maybe, yeah, with the roster expansions.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That could not be more exciting.
Yeah, I know. And that's why we need to get rid of Oliveira. It just opens up slots, too. Why clog it with, I mean, I don't know. I've turned on Oliveira, if you could.
Yeah,
tell.
Well, I mean, and, you know, not to go back to that, but I mean, it's, again, I mean, it's a guy that, and it's not like he's had a ton of plate appearances, but I mean, you know, he's, so far he's batted .245 for us. He's slugged .378. He's hit two homers. So,
yeah,
you know, if they can get out from under that money, maybe it's not the worst thing that
maybe,
ever
happened. Yeah, and maybe these guys are ready. I know I am. They cannot get here soon enough. All right, so let's look at the other side. Four pitchers that are doing fantastic. So Sean Newcomb, Mississippi. He's pitched 10 innings over two games. He's got a 1.8 ERA with 9 strikeouts. Pretty good. Fulte and Gwinnett has a 0.9 ERA over two starts, 10 innings as well, 8 Ks, 6 walks. But okay, he's not letting them score. Also in Gwinnett, Tyrell Jenkins has 2 starts. He has a 2.00 ERA, 9 Ks with 6 walks and 8 hits. And then finally, Max Fried in Rome has 2 starts with a 1.64 ERA and 11 strikeouts. So those guys all doing great. One guy not doing great, Tuki Toussaint down in Rome. He's a 6.75 ERA and only pitching 4 innings.
Whoopee.
But those other four,
hey,
it's exciting.
That is exciting. And two of them being at Gwinnett, even more exciting.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that they don't bring these guys up to be bullpen guys. I know I keep talking about Fulte eventually being our closer, but yeah, I would rather, if we're going to have them be starters, I would rather them be starters here, which maybe I'm okay. I mean, I'm totally content this season being old retread guys and them losing 100 games.
Me too.
Honest to God. I don't care.
Fully embrace that.
And I don't want the culture of the losing to get permeated into some of these young guys, even if it, you know, cost them some experience time. I would rather that they go into the new park in sort of a fresh, not this kind of lame dunk, stale feeling that's kind of residing over the Braves right now. I'd rather go in nice, new, fresh beginning next year, potentially a new manager, and they all get acclimated that way.
Yeah.
So I don't have any problem with these guys getting all the experience they need to get in AAA, AA, single A, whatever it might be this year. But it's great. Those numbers are great. I was waiting. I didn't check on them before the show because I was waiting to be optimistically surprised. And
you were. I was too. I mean, how similar they all look. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very, very excited. I'm completely with you. Just let them stay down there, work on stuff, build confidence, get excited about next season, get excited about being in the new stadium and being part of this new chapter of this storied franchise, which it is. So I'm with you 100%, and I'm excited. I can't wait.
Is Tuki walking a bunch of guys? Did you get that stat?
He did have some. Let me tell you. I can tell you right now. He has 3 strikeouts, 3 bases on balls.
Well, he's only pitched 4 innings though, right?
Yeah, he gave up 5 hits and 3 runs with 3 Ks and 3 walks in 4 innings.
Gotcha.
Yep. Yes. All right, Curtis. So let's do our shots in the dark. And this is where we, each week, we predict something that we think will happen during the week, crazy as it may seem. And our listeners submit one as well. So last week, our listener shot in the dark came from Kyle Whitlock. And he said that Malik Smith would hit 2 triples, 2 doubles, steal 2 bases, and score 2 runs. He had 1 double. So
there was so much Malik Salev in the shots in the dark for this week.
He energized. It was exciting Monday because I think everybody was excited. Then he got that nasty cut and then came back and then just looked a little overpowered, I hate to say. I don't think he's quite ready. So Kyle,
until he hit the game-winning hit today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I'll give him that. So, and that was helpful. So, Kyle, close but no cigar. Sorry for you. Sorry for Malik. Steve, even though he wasn't here, he did submit that Drew Stubbs would hit a triple and Malik wouldn't. He was half right and completely wrong because neither one did. And then Kurt, you said that Freeman would bat over 300 with three doubles. That didn't happen.
Spot on.
Yeah, he had a double, and he was a smidge under 300. And I said that Garcia would hit over 285, but more importantly, he would have two homers. He was over on the batting average by a bunch, but he did not hit any homers, which is really the main part of my shot in the dark. So I think we're all losers again. None of us, listeners included, are on the board. So let's change that this week, and let's start that with you, listeners. So submit your shot in the dark tomorrow on Twitter or on Facebook, but really, do Twitter, using the hashtag ABTSITD. Submit it before first pitch. We will pick our favorite and go from there and let luck carry the way. Curtis Steve submitted one for me for this for us for this week. So he thinks that Tehran bounces back and pitches 7.1 scoreless against the Dodgers. He, of course, is a homer fanboy. So
yes.
So take that into account. What about you?
I am going with Malik Smith.
All right.
I caught the fever. I have him, and I'm a little maybe not quite as ambitious as our listener was. Two batting over 260 with three stolen bases.
Ooh. I'd like to see those three stolen bases. That would be great. I think that even with all my concerns I spoke of earlier, I think Freeman bounces back this week. He plays well against the Mets. I think he'll be happy to see them. I think he gets a homer, two doubles, and hits over 300 for the week.
Aggressive.
Hey, that's how I roll.
Mm.
All right, Curtis, so let's finish this with looking at the week ahead, and you've got the overview of who we're facing this week. So what do we got coming up?
Well, yeah, not great, as you would imagine. Actually, a couple of these guys sort of struggling, but sometimes we see that, and then they right the ship against Los Bravos. First we have Tehran, as Steve projected. He starts off against our old buddy Alex Wood, who has sort of continued his middling ways with the Dodgers. He is 1-1 with a 4.5 ERA. Tehran Wood, then it goes Matt Whistler. Whistler has two starts this week against household name Ross Stripling.
Mm.
Stripling coming in 0-0, but with a 2.03 ERA, a 0.75 whip. So perhaps he will be a household name before too long. Then we get Williams Perez against Clayton Kershaw. And of course, it's Clayton Kershaw 2-0 with a 1.64 ERA. Bud Norris gets matched up against Matt Harvey with the Mets series starting. Harvey has really not been very good so far this year. 0-3 with a 5.71 ERA.
Nor have the Mets,
owing even more so to the next starter, who gets Chacin, who we did not talk about at all, who was quite brilliant this week in his two starts.
Yes.
Gets Steven Matz, who is 1-1, but with a 7.27 ERA. And then Whistler in his second start, Whistler, a couple of tough matchups. He gets Syndergaard, who is overpowering, even better than Kershaw, 1-0 with a 0.69 ERA. So that's your matchups. A couple of tough starts we're going to have.
Yeah.
And we seems like haven't gotten a hit off Kershaw in about four seasons. So
yeah. If we could only face him or
Syndergaard for that matter.
Yeah.
But we missed DeGrom, who we never get a hit off of. He just had a baby, so I don't know if he's going to be on paternity leave during this week, or we just missed the rotation with him. But some silver lining there.
Whatever the reason, I don't complain. All right, so Steve said, these are all home games. He said we go 3-3, 2-1 against the Dodgers, 1-2 against the Mets. I actually think it's the reverse of that. I think we will go 3-3, but it's 1-2 against the Dodgers and 2-1 against the Mets.
I'm going to go I'm going to go with Steve. I'm going to go 2-1, 1-2 for a 3-3 week.
All right.
Which seems wildly optimistic. Hey, I'm happy about that.
I think 500 weeks will be a good thing. If we could keep those up throughout the season, I'd be happy with that.
Well, I mean, and you know that it might be due to facing some not great Marlins pitching, but I mean that the stats for this week were better. I mean, there were some guys that actually got some hits this week, and it wasn't just Adonis Garcia and Markakis. I mean, Beckham had some hits this week. Jace Peterson had some hits this week.
Yep.
Daniel Castro, who, of course, is instant offense when he comes up. you know, so maybe they've some guys that can turn some things around and start going in the right direction. I mean, there's still lots of guys that aren't hitting on this team. Frenchie, Eric Ibar had an 0-43 week, but...
Oh yeah, there's a lot more people not hitting on this team than are hitting on this team still. Yeah.
So,
but there were you're right.
We await them all.
Yes.
Going to be producing this juggernaut, this offensive juggernaut yes. that Capoello promised.
Exactly. The season has started, guys. These games count. Show up whenever you want to.
Right.
All right. All right, Curtis. So that's the show. Steve will be back next week for all of his loyal fans. And for Kurt and I, too. Remember, you can now find us on blogtalkradio.com, but you can still find us, as always, on iTunes and on Stitcher. You can follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk, and you can visit www.atlantabaseballtalk.com to listen to all of our shows, read our blog, and post a comment. So thanks again for listening, everybody, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.